Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com, online and on the air at 1360 Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. Today we're coming from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm out on my Miss America tour again. You can go to CindySheehanSoapbox.blogspot.com to see where I'm going to be. This week I'll be in Columbus, Ohio, Norfolk, Virginia, and Charlottesville, Virginia. So go to the Blogspot and check up the dates and where the events are going to be. I have an update on my friend Cynthia McKinney. She was released from Israeli jail. She's back in the States. Nobel laureate May Reed Maguire, who was also arrested by Israel, is back in Ireland. She's a Nobel laureate. She won the Nobel Peace Prize. We're trying to get May Reed on my show for next week, so stay tuned for that. But when we come back from the break, we'll be chatting again with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts on a variety of topics. Again, this is Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and we'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Joining us again today is Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and we're going to be talking about a variety of subjects with him. Paul Craig Roberts was Assistant Secretary of Treasury under President Reagan, and he writes on a whole range of topics. Dr. Roberts, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being on again. We had some really good, interesting response to last time you were on. And I think some of the people, well, everybody who listens to me, I think they're pretty progressive, pretty liberal, pretty far on the left, and they were surprised that someone who worked for Ronald Reagan had a lot of the same ideas that they did. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, I think Reagan gets a bad rap. You know, he did two things. He ended the Cold War. And the neoconservatives were very angry at him for not winning it.
Uh-huh.
He cured the stagflation, which was imperiling the economy. And so he ought to get credit for that. Those are two major achievements, and not many presidents have any kind of achievements of that kind. So, and the bad things he did were largely the work of the neoconservatives, and it's not clear to what extent he was even apprised of their doings until they blew up, and then he fired them.
When you talk about neoconservatives in the Reagan administration, What individuals are you talking about?
Well, there was Richard Perle.
Right.
And there was, his name just escapes me. He was on the George W. Bush National Security Council. He was actually, I think, convicted and then pardoned. I don't know why the name doesn't come.
There were so many neocons in Bush's administration.
Bush
it's
had
hard to think.
Far more than Reagan, and they were at higher
right.
levels.
Right.
Though Richard Perle did have a very important position in the Defense Department. But, of course, you see, in those days, the Soviet Union was there, and even though I think the threat was exaggerated, it was far more real than the threat from Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or some amorphous terrorism. The Soviet Union was actually there, was well armed, and was somewhat aggressive, and so people didn't really understand the neocons at the time as being anything other than somebody who was prepared to stand up to the Soviets.
Well, Alice,
their
you
true
know, someone...
stripe hadn't come out yet. Their spots and stripes weren't really clear to people.
Right. Well, no, they weren't. But you, someone who is on the inside there, what do you think, and this is like off topic, but I think this is an interesting question, because we don't really have a set topic today, but what do you think that George Bush, the dad's role was with the neoconservatives in Ronald Reagan's administration?
I don't know. Probably the first George Bush, that was the Republican establishment, and they probably weren't very enamored of neoconservatives. And I think the neoconservatives got in through the conservative side because they were seen as allies against the Soviets.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's how they got in. But I do know at the time there was this committee on the present danger.
Mm-hmm.
And it consisted largely of the old Democrats. And I remember there was an effort to bring the neoconservatives into that committee, and there was a tremendous opposition to it. So it was an anti-Soviet committee, but people like Douglas Dillon, who I think had been, and Joe Fowler, and they had been Treasury Secretaries for Kennedy and Johnson, they looked askance at the neoconservatives, and I can't remember how the issue was resolved, whether they let them in or didn't let them in, but I remember there was a big opposition to neoconservatives coming on to that.
Well, they were, I understand, under the George Bush administration, the first one, that they were called the crazies, if I'm not mistaken.
They may well have been.
Yeah. Well, let's
I didn't
get
pay
back.
Much attention to them at the time, I'm afraid. I was doing other things.
Well, the whole political philosophy of neoconservatism really didn't, at least in my consciousness, didn't raise to the forefront until the second Bush administration, where, like we've said, he packed his administration with neoconservatives. And then you research it way back to the early 60s with, the beginning of the neoconservative movement that rose up along with the radical Islamicist movement, which is a very interesting trajectory. But I want to talk about a few things. The reason I asked you on my show originally to be back on it was to talk about Iran and what you think is happening in Iran, which is, I think the neoconservative agenda is to move forward with some kind of invasion, whether it's from America or the United States or Israel on Iran. And it's amazing to me that it seems to be even more acceptable now that Bush is president than it was when, I mean, I'm sorry, that Obama is president than it was when Bush was president.
Yes. Well, the neoconservatives, you know, their agenda is American hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
And they mean over the entire world. And in that sense, they have some things in common with the liberal internationalist, though the neoconservatives are more aggressive about it. So, and the reason they focused on the Middle East is because they're also allied with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they looked at the Middle East, they saw three independent countries, Iraq, Syria, and Iran, that were prepared to support Hamas, Hezbollah, and make it harder for Israel to simply steal the entire West Bank and also to steal southern Lebanon. And so the alliance with Israel came together with this drive for American hegemony, and they cooked up the invasion of Afghanistan and then the war with Iraq. And if they can get a puppet government in Iran, then it means the end of Syria as an independent country as well, and it also means the end of Hamas and Hezbollah, and there would be nothing in Israel's way of finishing off the Palestinians. And, of course, Israel wants the water resources in southern Lebanon. So for the neocons, they get two main goals by pushing the offensive against Iran. And I think you're completely correct that they will persist in this. And we know for a fact that in 2007, in May of 2007, President George Bush, instructed the CIA to begin a black ops program of destabilizing the Iranian regime.
Right.
And that's been going on for several years, and I think it focused on this past election. And I think that the CIA was able to exploit disagreements among the handful of ruling Ayatollahs and was able to exploit the disaffection of some of the secularized, westernized Iranian youth in Tehran. And so they were able to produce a confrontation over the election. And the American media, of course, cooperated in presenting it as a stolen election, even though there was never any evidence presented that it was stolen. It was just an assertion, like the assertion that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, which he did not have. And I think they have succeeded in further isolating the Iranian government and setting them up for more sanctions or maybe knuckling them in to American pressure and possibly even having succeeded in setting them up for the military attack. So it's all been done with taxpayers' money and in nefarious ways. And the media, of course, serve that purpose as well.
Okay. I have what you just said. I wrote down like three questions. You said that if we installed a puppet government in Iran, that would be the end of Syria and Lebanon. Now, first of all, what would constitute a puppet government? Because we know that the president of Iran is not the leader of Iran. It's the Ayatollahs, and it's the Grand Ayatollah who actually are the leaders of Iran. So would the Ayatollahs have to be overthrown? And how would that mean then if we were able to install a puppet government or to really destabilize the Iranian government, how would that bring an end to Syria and Lebanon and Hamas and Hezbollah?
All right. Well, to answer the first question, the ruling Ayatollahs is a fairly small group.
Uh-huh.
And some of them have lost out and been excluded.
Uh-huh.
For example, the current president, Ahmadinejad, defeated Rafsanjani in his first bid for election, you know. And,
right.
And Rafsanjani's man is Mousavi, the one that was defeated in this recent election. So
would you think that Mousavi would have been more friendly to Israel and the U.S.?
I don't know that he is by nature, but if they are fighting among themselves and a source of strength for Mousavi and the people backing him, such as Rafsanjani and some of the other top Ayatollahs, if it strengthens them to be allied with America, then I think they would do it, because
uh-huh.
they're mainly trying to get back in the game. They've been shunted aside by others, and they're still powerful people within that country, and they're trying to get back in the act. And I think that just the rivalries and frustrations and ambitions of men cause them to put those things before the well-being of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's entirely possible that they would come to some kinds of agreements that would make them somewhat less independent than they are now in order to have American support as a way of maintaining their power or exercising it. So I think that is,
mm-hmm.
but even if they aren't, the United States is capable of exploiting and manipulating the conflict within that group. You see what I'm saying?
No, I totally do.
Yeah.
But if something happened, you know, to undermine the government of Iran as it stands right now, how would that follow that it would be the end of Syria and Lebanon? And we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. We have to take a quick break right now. This is Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and at 1360 Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about this very interesting topic with my guest, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. We'll be right back.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at cindysheehansoapbox.com and 1360 AM Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and we were going to talk about how, you know, undermining the Iranian government would be the end of Syria and Lebanon. So sorry I had to interrupt you there, Dr. Roberts. Please continue.
Well, if Iran came under American influence, then it would leave Syria as the only independent country, and it's not strong enough or positioned geographically or economically or militarily to continue without also accepting American leadership. And so there's no way that one country could be a holdout when we've rolled up the rest of the area. Now, the reason it would be the end of Hamas and Hezbollah is that their main supporters are Iran and Syria. So if Iran accepts to some extent American leadership, clearly it's going to be pressured not to continue supporting Hamas,
right,
and Hezbollah. And so that would be the end of those organizations, and Israel would simply be able to complete the theft of the entire West Bank, and Hezbollah is in the south of Lebanon, and Israel would probably be able to move against them successfully in order to capture the water resources, the river,
right,
there. And that's, of course, Israel's aims. That's what they want. They want to have all the West Bank and southern Lebanon. And so I think that's what the neoconservative goal is as well. It's the same as Israel's. And that, I think, is the reason for the pressure on Iran. I don't think it has anything to do with their election, whether it was stolen or not stolen. I don't think it has anything to do with the women's rights or dress codes. It's
right.
Got nothing to do with the nuclear energy or the allegation of nuclear weapons. It mainly has to do with, we do not want an independent Iran.
What, since you wrote your last article, I think it was over this past weekend, we've heard that Vice President Joe Biden and Saudi Arabia have basically given Israel the green light to attack Iran. And, you know, if the putative reason is to, you know, destroy its nuclear capability, what would that attack look like?
Well, I just don't know. I don't think it has. I mean, Israel may be worried about the nuclear energy program because Israel may want the monopoly of weapons in the area. But Iran, you know, the International Atomic Energy Agency monitors the nuclear energy program in Iran, and
right,
keeps saying there's no sign of nuclear weapons. And the United States National Intelligence Estimate came out, and all the agencies agreed unanimously that Iran had abandoned a nuclear weapons program, you know, some 5 years ago. So there's no real basis to this nuclear thing. It's part of the scare factor. that we used to demonize Iran.
Uh-huh.
You know, like we demonized Saddam Hussein with weapons of mass destruction and mushroom clouds. It was all just propaganda, and that's what the nuclear thing is about. See, if Iran had a nuclear weapon, it couldn't use it against Israel anyhow, not just because of Israeli nuclear retaliation, but because if Iran were to use nuclear weapons on Israel, it would kill all the Palestinians.
Right.
And so what would be the purpose of that, you know? So the whole thing is just another hoax that they use. What they're trying to do is to destroy the independence of Iran, independent of American hegemony. So I guess they figure an attack, an Israeli attack on Iran would start a war, and Iran would retaliate, and then we would have an excuse to go in and try to do there what we did in Iraq and what we're trying to do in Afghanistan, or somehow get in place there a government that would follow mainly our lead. And maybe we think that, oh, the Iranians don't want to be invaded, and so they'll kowtow in part to America to avoid all the destruction of a war. So I can't really say. They don't call me up from Washington and tell me what their plans are, but it would be something along those lines, and that's what it's about. It's not about anything that they claim, you know, nuclear weapons or women's rights or elections, or it's not about any of that.
Well, first of all, you know, call me whatever you want to call me, a crazy peacenik, but I don't think the U.S. It's a good use of the U.S. military. Even though I'm a raging feminist, I'm a raging humanist, it's not a good use of the U.S. military to protect women's rights. And that's an excuse that I hear from people on the so-called left why Obama is escalating in Afghanistan, because we're protecting women's rights. Well, Dr. Roberts, do you think that using the U.S. military to, you know, surge in Afghanistan to protect women's right to perhaps kill them and their children so they don't have to wear a burqa is a good use of the U.S. military or a good rationale for this violence?
Of course not. And moreover, I think it's cultural imperialism. It's ethnocentric. It shows extraordinary hubris. I mean, they have a culture that doesn't think like ours. And in that culture, what we call women's rights is a non-existent concept. It's that the kind of rights they have are different. And it's true that the ones that tend to get secularized and westernized and live in main cities, they tend to want to be like Americans. But the culture itself is different. So when we talk about taking women's rights, we're talking about destroying those cultures.
Well, and it's really amazing to me. I think unique on the, you know, the so-called left, whatever you call it, of the spectrum, is that I have been critical of Obama since before he even got the nomination, because I actually did something that most people didn't do. I listened to what he was saying, not just the way he said it. But it's amazing to me that the same people who vilified the Bush administration and Bush's foreign policies are now almost supporting those same policies just because a different person is doing them. And my theory is, and I want to see what you think about this, is that there was no way that this country was going to support another military excursion into Iran under Bush and Cheney, because they became so unpopular and so hated that it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't have been good. But now that we have this kinder, gentler face of the U.S. empire, that some people who would be adamantly opposed to an invasion of Iran under Bush will be not so opposed to it under Obama.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. I agree with you. That's true. Exactly correct.
So to me, it's just a ruse of the ruling class to change leadership every 4 to 8 years, because then, you know, the new person is able to advance the old policies even faster than the old president was.
Right. It's the same interest groups rule no matter who's elected. And the agenda doesn't really change. People think that the two parties stand for different things, and one is for the people and one is for the rich. And that's just all, it's really ridiculous. I don't know why people think that.
I try to get people to realize it is the system. It's not the person who's in charge of the system.
Yeah.
But another huge event, in my opinion, that flew under the radar of the U.S. corporate media was when Cynthia McKinney and 20 other people were trying to deliver humanitarian aid by boat from Cyprus to Gaza. They were stopped in international waters, and their boat was boarded, and these people were literally kidnapped from their boat and held in by the Israeli Navy, and then held in Israeli jail for a while before they were eventually released. And I'm happy that Cynthia McKinney and May Reed McGuire are back in their countries, but I don't think everybody that was kidnapped has been returned. But you wrote an article called Pirates of the Mediterranean. You're one of the only people that gave this any attention.
Yes. Well, it's amazing that, the Spirit of Humanity, their ship, was delayed leaving from Cyprus because the United States State Department called to pass on the Israeli message that if the ship sailed, it wouldn't be permitted to reach Gaza.
Right.
And what struck me about it, Cynthia, was that the United States State Department, instead of telling Israel, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Don't you dare interfere with this ship. President Obama has already said that humanitarian aid has to reach the people in Gaza.
Right.
They're distinguished people on this ship. Some of them are Americans. And don't you dare interfere with it, or we'll send the Navy escort with it.
Right.
But they didn't do that. Instead, the State Department acted as the puppet of the Israeli government and sent the message on to Cyprus. And so the ship was delayed leaving until every member who was going to be on the ship signed a waiver absolving the Cyprus government from any responsibility should something happen to them at the hands of Israel. So it was amazing to me the United States government did nothing to stand up for the humanitarian effort. Instead, served as an Israeli puppet to warn the Cynthia McKinney and the Nobel laureate and the ship away from its goal and task. So I thought that was the most astonishing thing, and it does show that that the Israelis essentially control American foreign policy in the Middle East.
Well, I can't tell the difference between what's the difference between Cynthia McKinney, May Reed McGuire, and Cynthia McKinney, who was a U.S. congresswoman. She ran for president here in the United States in 2008 with the Green Party. What's the difference between Israel boarding their ship in international waters and kidnapping them, and the Somali pirates taking the captain of a private corporation boat in Somalian waters, and they sent the Navy SEALs in there to kill basically young teenagers who felt like they were protecting their territory?
Well, as far as you and I are concerned, there's no difference at all. But the way the law on piracy is written, it excludes governments. So if the United States government or the Israeli government or any government itself behaves like a pirate, it doesn't come under the law. It has to be non-governmental people who commit piracy. That's just the way the law is written. So, in other words, it's like having a law on murder, where if I kill somebody, I've committed murder, but if the government does it, they haven't. And that's the way the piracy laws are written. But, of course, you're right. There isn't any difference except in the way the law is written.
Well, yeah, it was astonishing to me, too, that, first of all, that it even happened, but that, secondly, it was a non-event in the U.S. corporate media. It's like the U.S. corporate media goes out of its way, as our government does, to protect the crimes of the Israeli government, that from their crimes in Gaza and the West Bank to this kidnapping of these 21 humanitarian aid workers who literally had crayons on their boat.
Right. Well, for decades, we have defended Israel and the UN. Every time the UN passes a resolution against them, the United States vetoes it. So you're completely correct. The United States is complicit in all of Israel's crimes against humanity and is Israel's enabler and provides the weapons
and
that Israel uses to murder civilians in Palestine and Lebanon. So that's what I mean when I said they essentially control our foreign policy.
Well, let's compare and contrast what happened in Iran a few weeks ago with what happened in Honduras last week. We just have a few minutes left. And I'm more interested in the media's response to what happened in Iran. It was overwhelming. The media was in love with the revolution. They were saying how the people standing up for their rights were courageous. When in America, if we stand up for our rights, we're thugs or kooks. And
right.
How there was a stolen election, and the media didn't cover our own stolen elections. And then there was a military coup in Honduras, and there are thousands of people who are protesting. They want their president back. And I don't see a lot of coverage about that in the corporate media.
No, there's not any. Once the media was concentrated under Bill Clinton, where about five firms own it.
Right.
It lost its independence because the value of these big media companies now are the federal broadcast licenses, and those, of course, are handed out by the government, so they can't afford to offend the government. And also, the media is no longer run by journalists. It's run by corporate advertising executives, and so they're at the mercy of advertisers, and so they can't upset the interest groups that provide the money for the ad. So there isn't any longer any print or TV media in the United States. It's just the Ministry of Propaganda.
Absolutely.
That has to defend the government's point of view and the point of view of the powerful interest groups that advertise in the newspapers. So that's the reason that they joined in the propaganda campaign against the Iranian election, and why they're silent when the United States, as an ally of the Venezuelan president, Chavez,
mm-hmm.
overthrown by the generals who were trained in the American military schools at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Right.
So it shows the rest of the world the hypocrisy of the United States, and it's one of the reasons that we're falling into such disrepute around the world. And I think that the ultimate outcome will be a weakening in our power and influence, because we just come across as so two-faced and false.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to have you on. You just talked about the weakening of the U.S. around the world. Pretty soon, I'd like to have you on so we can talk about the weakening of the dollar around the world. But thank you so much for joining us again, Dr. Roberts. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Cindy. Thank you very much.
We'll talk soon again.
Right.
This is Cindy Sheehan at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. We've been chatting with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. When we come back from the short break, I will be talking about the hypocrisy of the U.S. corporate media in my rant called Passing Propaganda as News. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and 1360 AM Rational Radio in Dallas, Texas. My rant today is called Passing Propaganda Off as News. Once I was on Hardball, and the host was Nora O'Donnell, who was filling in for Chris Matthews. I was her first guest that day, and when she was introducing the show before the first break, she introed me as the woman who met with communist dictator Hugo Chavez. We then went to break, and I told Nora, you know, Chavez is not a communist. He's a socialist, and he has been democratically elected several times, survived a CIA coup attempt, and the last election was certified by Jimmy Carter. She replied, yeah, we talked about that earlier, but we decided to call him a communist dictator anyway. I was appalled, but not shocked. I was born during the day, but not yesterday. And I realized a long time ago that the caca that passes for news is just that caca. Nora O'Donnell readily and unashamedly admitted to me that she deliberately, intentionally, and with full knowledge of forethought, spreads propaganda that she knows is not true. She conspired with others on her production team to broadcast lies. How often does this happen? Most of the time? News shows are not only lying, but are fully aware that they are propagandizing you. This happened on MSNBC, not Fox. We know that the news shows employed Pentagon shills to sell us Iraq and Afghanistan. We also know that the White House Iraq group that included people who are still on cable news, developed the product of the invasion like they were selling us some new and improved laundry detergent, douche, or toothpaste. Among the members of the White House Iraq Marketing Group was an actual marketing group, the Rendon Group. The WHIG, or WHIG, came up with the smoking gun mushroom cloud rhetoric, and members of the group should be on the short list for war crimes trials. We know that the CIA has been committing hanky-panky in Iran for over 50 years now, and that our government has pumped $400 million into that country to destabilize the Ayatollahs and the government, and that the Bush regime were absolutely jonesing for a war with Iran. But it and its policies had been so thoroughly discredited that the invasion of Iran would have been unacceptable to Americans. So what better time to foment revolution and instability in Iran than when we have a new and improved emperor of the U.S. Imperium? I'm not saying that there are not wonderful people in Iran who are actually doing this for good intentions, but what's false and what's real? When I saw the riots on the streets of Tehran, in the mainstream news, why is it said that these people are bravely standing up for their rights, but when people bravely stand up for their rights in Oakland, they're called thugs? I'm reminded of the staged media event of the pulling down of Saddam's statue early on in the sanitized and mass-marketed invasion of Iraq. I've read commentaries on both sides from people that I respect, and I still don't know what to believe or whom to support in this. But I do know that I don't trust the politicians in this country or that country. I'm not bold enough to make a definitive statement on the issue. And when I was in Princeton, New Jersey, an Iranian man came up to me after my talk and said I was smart for taking this position because his relatives in Iran don't even know what's going on. My response to the events in Iran is to turn off the noras of the airwaves and do my own research. Let's think for ourselves before we rush off to support or condemn the Green Revolution. Okay, our Ask Cindy question today isn't so much a question, but yesterday I got an email from a person who claimed to be in the U.S. military, and he, you know, besides all the usual bull pucky about me dishonoring my son's memory and spitting on his grave, et cetera, et cetera. He called me a traitorous whore. And if he is in the U.S., this person was in the U.S. military or is in the U.S. military, to me, they take an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of America. And that oath includes my freedom of speech. And even if he doesn't agree with me, he should agree with my right to have this freedom of speech, because actually, supposedly, that's what he's fighting for. And it just is amazing to me that because I disagree with the establishment, I disagree with the system, I disagree with people just like us who live in other countries being killed for profit, that I am a traitorous whore. And it just to me is very hypocritical that someone who is supposedly defending his freedom, our freedoms, everybody's freedom, is trying to limit somebody's free speech. So I just want to tell people who do things like that, just, you know, please grow up. And if you want to have a reasonable discussion on the issues, email me. Let's have a reasonable discussion on the issues. I'm Cindy Sheehan. My email is cindy@cindysheehansoapbox.com. Email me anytime. And if you want to debate the correctness of Iraq and Afghanistan and now Pakistan, if you want to debate that torture is an American value, then email me and we'll talk about it. But when you call names, that's shutting discussion down. And so your soapbox assignment this week is to go to cindysheehansoapbox.com if you're not already there and spread the word around. Let other people listen to our great shows. We have about 25 or so in the can, and they're awesome topics, and they're still as relevant today as they were 25 weeks ago or whenever we first aired these shows. And spread the word around. Spread the truth around. spread an alternative voice and vision around to the so-called two-party corporate vision. Next week, we'll be hoping to talk to May Reed McGuire, who was in Israeli prison, along with Cynthia McKinney. Maybe we'll get our good friend Cynthia on, too. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my guest, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and as always, you for listening. This is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Tune back in next week.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.